Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My thanks to this week's sponsor, Wetman's Pinks of Dawlish, Devon. Their Dianthus Bridal Star and Pink Ruffles are scenting the air on warm afternoons. Boy, they are cracking cultivars. Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange some of the latest news, views and a bit of timely advice on all things gardening. Later, I'll be chatting to Malcolm Gregory, the grower at Double H Nursery, who's caring for millions of moth orchids. Meantime, what a week. From last Monday, the Royal Horticultural Society gardens have opened by timed ticket entrance, and thousands have had a great time in lovely sunny weather, certainly at the start of the week. Normally at this time, about 800 apparently would visit Hyde Hall during the week when the weather was warm and sunny, and since Monday, 1,600 to 1,800 have been thrilled to be back and really delighted that the gates are open once again. And since Wednesday, our floral fantasia area has been closed while we set about cladding what was to be our Chelsea Flower Show pyramid last May and will now stand outside over the weekend. Keep fingers crossed for us, will you? I just hope and pray it won't be too windy. I've always said that at Chelsea we will always work undercover because the rain can really deliver some frustrating conditions, and there's nothing worse than strong wind. At the top of the hill at Hyde Hall it can be pretty windy too, and some quite tall new varieties of salvia could take a battering. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed. Crowning the top of our pyramid, 4 metres high, is the first public showing of Philadelphus Fragrant Falls. It is a really elegant, pendular mock orange shrub with small single white flowers and the most beautiful fragrance. But the way that it weeps, the pendular habit, really is very attractive. Sparkling in colour are 4 new small-flowered but multi-blooming Gerbera Garvinia Cheeky series in 4 colours. Actually, Cheeky Red is very well named. Boy, they are lovely things, and they're going to produce masses of flowers by the look of them. We will have one side of our pyramid clad with them, and there'll be some bright colours, I'll tell you. We also have 4 of the new half-hardy perennial salvias in the Lake series. They come in 4 colours, and the most recent is Strawberry Lake, a really unusual deep red to pink. Difficult to really describe that colour accurately. And we have 5 new Safinias to celebrate 30 years since the introduction of the first really rich purple petunia. I'm really excited too by new multi-flowered roses in the Precious series. The grower told me that if this introduction of roses had been a shrub, flowering repeatedly from late May through to Christmas, everybody would be jumping up and down. But it's so easily dismissed as just another rose which it certainly isn't, bred by Noack in Germany, the foliage is so rich and shiny, it's disease resistant, and the most important thing though is that it repeat flowers, it just flowers and flowers. Floribunda type, you know, multi-blooms on each stem. And what about Grandma's Rose? Another newcomer this year, raised by Mayen in France, where it's known as Rayon de Soyel. And if my schoolboy French is anywhere near accurate, I think it means ray of sunshine or sunbeam. Well, I suppose every grandma has their sunbeam, don't they? And perhaps some of those little sunbeams will be buying Grandma's Rose, a really rich yellow, a lovely variety. For something a little bit different, we've also got one container of an onion, Allium Quantra. It's an F1 hybrid, very free flowering now. The bees absolutely love it, and it will flower for weeks. The flowering head, typical onion flower head, lavender coloured, will be about the size of a ping pong ball or perhaps a little bit bigger. But as well as the attractive ornamental flowers, you can pick and eat the leaves. They have a very mild, garlicky kind of flavour. When it comes to gardening advice, there was a panic call about a recently purchased rhododendron that the purchaser said was dying. In practice, on inspection, the flowers were certainly going over, but the plant wasn't dying. Amazing, isn't it? Do people expect rhododendrons to flower non-stop for month after month? I'm afraid we had to tell them that azaleas and rhododendrons have a really stunning and showing several weeks in flower. And then that's the end for the year. If you have bought one recently, and I've seen some absolute crackers on garden centres, the important thing from now onwards is to make sure they don't dry out. If rhododendrons especially get dry, then the outer edges of the leaves will curl down and round, and the tips will go black. If you see that, then you can be sure your rhododendron has been allowed to get dry. The compost needs a really good soaking to get it back into good health. If you can, sort of plunge the whole thing in a large bucket of water until the bubbles stop coming up. If it's rainwater, so much the better. And if it's out in the garden, then a drop or two of washing up liquid will just break the surface tension and will help to get the plant really well moistened again. Once it is really well watered, it's worth giving a liquid feed with some ericaceous plant food, and you can do that up till about the end of June, first week in July, but it's better not to feed beyond that time, because if you do, it encourages growth at the expense of flower. And most rhododendrons and azaleas will be putting down their flower buds late July and into the autumn. I had another query too about raspberry beetle. That's a little tiny creature that lays eggs, and tiny maggots result. Honestly, I don't like maggots in my raspberries. And if, when you see the first raspberry turn pink, you use an insecticide, you know, make sure you check on the bottle that you're using the right material. You can knock out the adult at that stage and you'll have clean fruit. There's another little beetle that's causing me concern too on asparagus. They would be a couple of millimetres or so long and very easily identified because they're yellow on the back with a black cross. They're quite tricky to catch. You need to open two fingers and slip through the stem so you cup your hand just beneath where the asparagus beetle is feeding, and then it will drop down into your hand, and with the luck you'll be able to dispose of it. I will probably stop cutting asparagus now. We usually say stop the 14th of June, but I started cutting quite early with the early spring, and I think that now would be a good time to let the grass grow, build the roots well, ready for next year.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm very pleased to introduce today Malcolm Gregory, who's the growing manager for a company called Double H. Now, they produce literally millions of plants. And so if you've been into the supermarket and bought a moth orchid, there's a very good chance it would have passed through Malcolm's hands. Malcolm, how did you get into this, first of all? How did you get into orchid growing?
Well, this is my second time at Double H. I came to Double H when I left school way back in 1975. I started in with them looking at the hydroponic growing for the indoor house plants. So that was till about 1980 when I went off to college. Then when I left college, my father had a little nursery that he was a foreman on as a strawberry farm. The owners retired, so we took it over. So that happened on for about 20 odd years. And then with the supermarkets starting to open up around us, we become no longer commercially viable. So we packed up and I thought I was going into retirement then. But one of the managers at Double H saw me walking the dog one day, dragged me back to Double H and said, right, we're going to start looking at doing orchids. You're in charge of the orchids. So this was way back in, say, 2006, 2007. During that year as well, I was sent off to Germany and Holland to learn the trade of orchid growing. And basically with orchids commercially growing, you do the exact opposite to what you do for a normal crop, and that's how you grow an orchid. The orchid house that I look after is about 6 acres, so 25,000 square metres.
That's huge.
We do factory farming of the plants. We do 32,000 plants a week.
I mean, that's an amazing number. 32,000 a week.
Yeah, so we got it takes about a year to grow from potting to selling the orchids. So overall, I've got about 1.5 million plants on site of orchids.
Well, now, can we go right to the beginning? Because they only spend the last year of their life with you, don't they? Where do they start out?
Well, they're actually test tube babies. They're done from meristem cuttings into test tubes. The cells are taken off the mother stems of the varieties that we want, and the cells divided out, put into flasks, into agar jelly, and then grown on in the laboratory.
So when these little tiny propagules are multiplying in the flask, how long does that take, and how do you get them out and able to survive?
Well, that's all done in the flask. They're transferred, pricked out, if you like, from one flask to another flask in the laboratories to grow the cells into young plants. Different jelly is used to produce, with different hormones in, to produce what we want, the roots and then the leaves. And after about 9 months, when they are large enough, they go off to the young plant producers, which then just, well, the flasks these days look like little lunch boxes, little plastic lunch boxes. So they are just unsealed, taken out and pricked out then, and they go into plugs. The plug themselves is little coir glue plugs.
What sort of size would they be then? About a couple of centimetres?
Yes, that's it. They're a 60 plug tray. So it's a couple of centimetres.
Is that how you get them?
Yes, that's how we get them. The producer grows them on for another 9 months. And when they reach the right size with the good root system on them, they send them over to us. Again, we use the European growers because we're the only grower from young plants in the hot zone in this country now. So again, we have the 32,000 plants come over on a lorry every week.
And you, of course, don't put them in coir, do you?
We use our substrate that we use is bark, and it is coir these days. It used to have a little bit of peat in it, but we had problems with composting the bark down and dust. So we've gone over to a 70% bark, 30% coir mix. The main reason for that as well, as I say, all the dust used to make the edges of the pot covered over, and the roots need light to make them grow. They don't grow in the dark. That's why we use the bark to be open. The roots don't grow into translucent pegs.
When you buy a plant at the supermarket, it's quite important that you keep that transparent pot in the daylight?
No. In the supermarkets, the growing is done. It's just flowering. The plant is quite happy in a ceramic pot.
When I buy a moth orchid from the supermarket and I bring it home and put it in a ceramic pot, what kind of length of life have I got? How many months do you think?
They will go on for months and can go on for months flowering, but the plant itself can survive for years. The biggest killer at home of orchids is watering. Do not let them stand in water. At home, they thrive on neglect.
Really?
Yes.
So how often would you water?
Watering at home, once a week, if that. One way to check your watering is if the have a look at the roots of the plant. If they are green, they are quite happy. It's when they start going grey, that's when it needs a little bit of water. But also, if you look at the pot itself, if there's a bit of condensation around the pot, it is quite happy.
Oh, I like that tip. A bit of condensation around the pot indicates that they have got enough moisture for the time being.
Yeah. Remember, we grow them in from plug plants now, the coir plug, and that actually holds a little bit of water towards the centre anyway. So that acts as a little reservoir. The roots themselves are just water reservoirs. A orchid will only take up water from its root tip. They are quite strange things to grow.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And what about feeding then?
Not really necessary at that stage. You can give them a little bit of feed again after you've reflowered them, when they're starting to open up, a little bit of feed to boost them on. But the feed, they don't need a lot of feed. So the special orchid feed that you do have, that you can give them a feed with, is actually a very, very low nutrient feed. So what I suggest is you can also, if you want to feed, is use ordinary houseplant feed, but only about quarter strength.
And then how often? Once a month or something?
Yeah, once a month. So.
Now, Malcolm, you talk about 35,000 plants a week, many of them going out to supermarkets. Mid-March, of course, the whole trade stopped. So how did you cope with that?
Yes, normally they go, we deal with four supermarkets, Marks & Spencer's, Sainsbury's, Waitrose and Tesco's, Marks & Spencer's being the biggest. So all of a sudden it went down to 40% of their budgeted sales. So we had quite a few plants hanging around.
So, I think you did.
Yeah. So,
well, and every week, of course, you've got another 35,000 stacking
up. Yeah, they just keep coming through and through and through.
Yeah.
We took some around to the various care homes and hospitals around to give away, and some went home for family and friends. And in the meantime, they started up to do online sales. And this is through our Love Orchids website. We set up the site itself at Chelsea in 2016 to promote growing of orchids and how to look after them and their history and everything else. So first few days, there was just 40, 50 boxes going out in a day when we first started out. And then after a week or so, it took off and we ended up with about 1,000 boxes a day. And these are 4 plants to a box.
Amazing, isn't it? How something like that can suddenly open up a completely new business. I mean, that's over 20,000 a week, if I've done the maths correctly.
Yeah, so it really did help. So we will now...
Well, now, if listeners are interested in your 4 mini orchid online delivery, how do they find you?
Well, it's on the Love Orchid site. There is a button on there which does the offers. So we've got the offer going on there, and we've also got slowly branching out to extra bits and pieces. And it's also got hints and tips on there. And there's also a little video on there showing our production cycle through, so you can see the greenhouses and the spacing machines and that working on that. Just a little video on that.
Malcolm, it's great speaking to you. Thank you for your help, particularly with care of orchids at the home. And as soon as I can, I must come down and visit Double H and see them for myself.
Yeah, you're always welcome.
How about the Margaret Atwood quote for this week's tailpiece? She said, "In the spring, at the end of the day, you should smell like dirt." I certainly smelt like dirt, having spent a good few hours cleaning beds and hoeing this week, and I can't wait for rain. The smell of rain falling on parched soil is a gardener's summer delight. Well, I must up and at it again. There's several plants I can see that are wilting, desperate for a drink, and I must get at that. Have a good gardening week. We'll be back with you, God willing, next week. My thanks to this week's sponsor, Wetman's Pinks of Dawlish, Devon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.